Here we go. Time to take you home on a Tuesday with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rupp, along with Adam Lundy. We've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Busy day today coming up this hour. About 30 minutes down the road, we've got James Boyd from The Athletic, and we will talk about the Indianapolis Colts, of which he is now handling the Indianapolis Colts beat. It's a short week for the Colts, so a lot to talk about as we recap what they did against Tennessee, but more importantly, start to prep for what they're going to face with the Denver Broncos. James Boyd coming up in 30 minutes. Also, we are chirp, chirp, talking the Ball State Cardinals today because we've got their head coach, Mike New, who's going to join the program coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. And so, you know, the Cardinals come off that big come-from-behind overtime victory at home against the Northern Illinois Huskies, coached by former Lures product Thomas Hammock. And so it was a huge win for Ball State, and they had both the offensive and defensive player of the week in the MAC, and Paddock, the quarterback. He threw for over 400 yards in the game, completing 40 passes. So they're getting – and I want to talk to Coach New and just find out, when did the MAC decide they were going to have an offensive identity? Have you noticed that the MAC, week in, week out, seems to be the highest-scoring conference in the country?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, is that just the way the coaches were hired? Is it – you know, that they got together at a secret Zoom meeting and said, hey, guys, let's make a name for ourselves. Let's put up 50 every week, because that's almost what the conference has become. It's become a very offensive conference. And I don't mean offensive in the fact that they are offend you. But anyway, Coach Mike New joining us at 5:20. So all you Ball State Cardinals fans, get ready. Chirp, chirp. It's coming up in our second hour today. Also, we've got a chance for you to win a large pizza at a Pizza Hut. It's a Tuesday, so we'll play Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. I am back in the game today. Last week, we had our guest host who participated, and we had an 0-for. It was an 0-for-5 for both our contestant and our guest host. So hopefully today, we come up. Didn't somebody actually text us and complain that I was insulting the guest by
they said that you
having fun with him about going 0-for-5?
Because yeah, they said you shouldn't have poked fun when you guessed after they had already guessed and still got it wrong, I think.
Yeah, but actually, I was guessing along. I was writing down my guesses as the contest was going on. And yes, I did get them wrong. and number two, I don't think Mark, we were just having some fun with Mark.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he took it that way. So 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Yesterday, by the way, I came in. I said I was a little fatigued. I had had the double vaccination the day before because I had gotten my COVID vaccine and flu vaccine same day, different arms. And so they put one in the right arm, one in the left arm. Don't know which was which. I can't remember at this point which they put in what arm. But yesterday was feeling very lethargic. Okay, like kind of a headache, but not a bad headache. Just very worn down. Felt like my eyes were heavy, like my body was weak. It was just, it's kind of like how you feel when you have the flu, but not a bad flu. You know, you just kind of, well, I mentioned that yesterday on the show, and apparently it triggered someone that was very concerned about me to send me a rather very lengthy email about the dangers of the vaccine and the anti-vax crowd. And let me just say, first of all, by this morning, I felt fine. I've never had a reaction to a vaccine, and so thanks for your concern, but I'm doing well. Now, but here's the other thing that I did think about, is that I've never had a reaction to one of the COVID vaccines, but yet every single person I know that has had some kind of an adverse reaction to one of the vaccinations is a woman. Do you know anybody that's taken a vaccine, had some type of bad reaction? Honestly, I can just tell you, through my family, friends, the people I know that complained about how bad they felt after they got the vaccination, every one of them was a woman. And I brought it up to my doctor. And he said, you know, I never really thought about it, but he said, it does seem like almost all of them that I know of were women. I'm just wondering if that's the pattern, because I've never felt anything but normal after getting any of the vaccinations. But, you know, with all the traveling I do, with all the people that I'm around, I just can't take the chance. Okay, and you can send me all the propaganda you want, and it won't matter. It's just because I'm in a particular situation where when you weigh it all out, it's the best thing is to be rather safe, is to be safe rather than sorry, and to not take chances, because I can't go on these trips with the mastodons and be the lone wolf as an unvaccinated participant sitting courtside at NCAA games, etc. So that's just the way it is. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. I don't know if you caught this today, but this was, how do I put it, rather critical report that came out today from the Indy Star. David Woods did, and I guess you would call it an investigative report, but it's based mostly on public information that has now surfaced in the public courts, but it involves the women's track program at Huntington University. And a couple of years ago, the Indy Star did a hit piece, I would call it, on Purdue Fort Wayne women's basketball. And I say it's a hit piece because they basically took one side of it that was all anonymous sources and built a story against Purdue Fort Wayne and their women's basketball program without naming any of the witnesses or talking about who it was. And so, and not even accepting the response from the university, just basically like, well, they responded, but this is all they said. Well, in this case, they actually have witnesses that have come forward and told their personal stories. It's a lot like the Dr. Nasser case at Michigan State or with the United States Gymnastics, where you actually have women that have faces, that have names, that have come forward, told their stories to the Indy Star. There are other women that that they spoke to that corroborated the story. And basically what it is a lot of intimidation, and it does include sexual assault behavior from the former women's track coach at Huntington University. But very tough to see that stuff exists with the amount of press and media coverage, because it's not like the Michigan State story is new, or it's not like the United States women's gymnastics story is new. And to see that this stuff exists. Now, this goes back to 2019, 2020, and then up to 2021, but it is not something that is listed as current. But all I will say is, because I don't want to go through all the details on the radio, but I will say it is a piece probably worth reading and formulating your own opinion on, and try to keep an open mind for both sides. Look at it and you determine what you think of that whole situation. But that came out on the Indy Star today. And of course, to their credit, Indy Star, and I know print media and in particular newspapers across this country have kind of been a dying breed. It's been very tough to keep up newspapers and keep the publications going with newspapers. But the Indy Star consistently does have a track record of having some pretty good investigative stories and reports. And this appears to be yet another one by David Woods, who's been on our program. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Colts on their short week. They've got Denver coming up this week. Of course, it's a battle of two teams that in the offseason decided they needed an upgrade at quarterback, and both teams went out and got a guy that they thought would upgrade their quarterback position. And so far, both teams in a similar position, not necessarily getting the play they expected out of the quarterback they went out and got. For Denver, they paid a pretty heavy price to get Russell Wilson out of Seattle. The Colts didn't pay all that much to get Matt Ryan, but so far they're not getting all that much. Nine fumbles. What is it? Four interceptions, five interceptions so far for Matt Ryan. So, but that's the thing here is you've got two teams that have similar rosters. The difference was they both felt they needed the quarterback to kind of complete the entire roster, and they went out, got their guy. Russell Wilson for the Broncos, Matt Ryan for the Colts. And I think we both expected more, at least I expected more, from both of these teams with the quarterbacks that they got. I thought the Broncos had a real legitimate chance to win the division. I thought defense, one of the better in the league. I thought they'd be a top five defense. I thought they had some young weapons, especially guys that were playmakers that could get downfield, get vertical, and that's Russell Wilson's strength. I thought this was perhaps the completion of the puzzle in Denver, and so I'm surprised Denver sits 2-2. Now, we know Nathaniel Hackett has taken a lot of criticism out in Denver. Game management, play calling, the fourth down situation that, you know, he botched up when they decided to try a 60-some yard field goal when they could have gotten it much closer or at least attempted to. But you have to realize, and I said this yesterday, I think a lot of what appealed to the Broncos about Nathaniel Hackett was the chance that he could be part of a package that could bring Aaron Rodgers to Denver, because Nathaniel Hackett apparently had a really good relationship. It's kind of like Josh McDaniels when he was in New England, that if you thought you had a chance at getting Tom Brady by hiring Josh McDaniels, it would make Josh McDaniels look a lot more appealing as a potential head coach candidate. And I think that's part of what got Nathaniel Hackett hired out in Denver. But yeah, so big game coming up. We're going to talk more about this with James Boyd, who's going to be joining us coming up in about 15, 20 minutes or so. We mentioned this story yesterday. I wanted to get it into the show early today so we had some more time, because it came up very late in the show yesterday, and we had a lot of feedback on popular shows. So Rolling Stone magazine ranked top TV shows of all time, and they put Sopranos number one on the list. And so yesterday, Adam and I said, what would be your favorite all-time TV shows? And I don't know if it's just that we have an old listener base after 5:30, but they've got to be an older demo. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
To be choosing Andy Griffith's show.
And MASH.
And Walton's.
And stuff like that, yeah.
I mean, those were the shows we were getting yesterday. Now, I started to think through my life, what are some shows that I actually look forward to besides Masked Singer, which I enjoy? I also enjoy America's Got Talent. I think that's pretty cool to see all the unique acts. But seriously, shows for me, number one would be Seinfeld. I also enjoyed Cheers when it was on. the other show I liked when it originally started airing was CSI, back when it first started. And I would say like the first three or four seasons, I was totally hooked. Now, since then, I haven't watched it a whole lot, but I really liked the first three, four seasons of CSI. I have to admit, I binge watched one day. I think this was like maybe even during the pandemic. Dr. Pimple Popper. I know. Don't ask.
I was going to say, I don't even know.
You haven't heard of Dr. Pimple Popper?
I can't say
Dr.
that
Dr. Lee?
No.
She is a dermatologist.
Uh-huh.
And basically, it started because she was posting videos of popping pimples.
Okay.
And they kind of went viral, where it was literally popping a pimple that looked like just a blackhead, and it would end up being like this snake-looking thing that came out that was like 2 feet long.
Ooh.
Okay, so I know it sounds gross.
We're off to a great start.
Off to a great start. Yeah, put this one in the promo bin. It's like The Sports Rush with Brett Rump. And then they popped a pimple and it came out. But anyway, let's move on to another show.
Sure. Another show.
The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
That one's classic.
Classic.
Yes.
And I did like The Late Show with David Letterman. I watched those as kind of a pair back when I was in my teenage college years. Okay, Saturday Night Live came in on the list yesterday. Somebody said Saturday Night Live, and I said, you cannot take Saturday Night Live just by saying Saturday Night Live. You've got to say Saturday Night Live, what era? And for me, the era that I think was the best of Saturday Night Live was Will Ferrell, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, Chris Farley. What, I mean, man.
Yeah.
What a comedian that we lost too soon.
A lot of people will pick that era, I think, for sure.
Dallas, you probably don't know the TV show Dallas.
I don't know.
Who shot JR? You never heard? If you want to get, like today you're wearing, what do they call it, vintage t-shirt?
Yeah.
If you want to get a vintage t-shirt, go wherever you buy your vintage t-shirts and look for Who Shot JR?
I'll do it.
That was like the biggest thing in America was Who Shot JR. In fact, Adam, this is your homework for tonight. Write it down.
Okay.
I want you to look up Who Shot JR, and I want you to look at any video you find and the story behind it, because it was huge.
All right, it's written down.
Okay. That was part of the TV series Dallas. And you know the other show that I think was terribly underrated that not a lot of people talk about? Somebody has to back me up on this. In Living Color.
I've never seen it.
No?
No.
No?
No.
Man. Okay, first of all, it was the Wayans brothers. Uh-huh. You know the Wayans brothers?
No.
Jim Carrey?
Oh, I know Jim Carrey, yeah.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, my gosh.
A couple listeners weighing in. Someone suggested as their favorite show, 2.5 Men.
Ah, that's been on a long time.
Yep. And then someone not TV show related said, time to start Sam Ellinger. Let's tank and get a new quarterback.
Oh, I don't know.
Is it too early?
I mean, it's too early. It's too early. I mean, what'd the Colts start last year? 1-4?
Wasn't good.
No.
No.
And they ended up, really, they had a playoff spot secured by their 15th game, and then they ended up just tanking it in 16-17. So we're much too early to start that, especially when you look around the league and it looks like it's a league of a lot of mediocrity, like there's not dominant teams in the AFC. So I think it's way too early to decide this team is not worth.
Yeah, the Colts started off 3-1 and then lost their next one too. So they were 4-1 to start.
No, they were 1-4.
Yeah, 1-4. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I got it mixed up.
Yeah. So 1-4 last year. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line. In Living Color.
Is that more homework for me?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. They had like a house DJ, and they had a group of dancers that would dance like into commercial breaks or out of commercial breaks, and they called them the Fly Girls. You know who one of the Fly Girls was?
I don't.
I know you wouldn't, because you had no idea what I'm talking about, but it was Jennifer Lopez.
Jenny from the Block.
Jenny from the Block. Yeah, very back cool. In the young days. So, okay, yeah, add that one to your homework list. In Living Color, look up, because you had Jim Carrey. That was really where he became famous, was on that. It was a skit show, much like Saturday Night Live, just done different with Fox back in the early days of Fox television, back when they, you know, what, 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So, yeah, that will be another homework assignment for you. You'll be busy tonight, but we'll get a full update on that coming up tomorrow. Let's check headlines real quick. And to get you up to date with some of the top stories in sports, here we go with Adam Lundy.
All right, top headlines today. The Brewers get eliminated from postseason contention, and the 12 teams are set for MLB. In the American League, it's the Houston Astros, the New York Yankees, the Cleveland Guardians, the Toronto Blue Jays, the Seattle Mariners, and the Tampa Bay Rays. And in the National League, it's the LA Dodgers, the Atlanta Braves, the Cardinals, the New York Mets, the San Diego Padres, and the Philadelphia Phillies.
What division winner in the National League did not have one of the top three records in the National League?
I don't know.
That's the Cardinals.
It's okay. The Cardinals.
Next story.
The Kenny Pickett era is now officially here. That's right. Pittsburgh Steelers listed rookie Kenny Pickett atop the quarterback depth chart ahead of Mitch Trubisky for Sunday's game against the Bills.
Not surprised. We thought it was a 50-50 battle during training camp, and we just figured it was a matter of time before they would make that switch. They have decided to make that switch. I don't see a problem with it. Let's see what he's got. Pittsburgh is not a team competing for a championship this year, so you might as well see what you've got for the future.
The Milwaukee Bucks are favored to win the 2023 NBA championship, and Luka Doncic was voted most likely to win the MVP award in NBA.com's annual survey of league general managers.
Milwaukee, interesting, isn't it?
Slightly favored.
You've got Boston, and I wonder if it was after the Ime Udoka story broke.
That could definitely affect things.
Interesting, and it also... That Brooklyn, you know, I still think Brooklyn's right there with Milwaukee.
They've got a good team. It's just, can they gel?
I think it's interesting how they picked Milwaukee. Because I still think Phoenix, I think Golden State, I think both those teams have a better shot than Milwaukee. We'll see.
And those are your top headlines for today.
There you go. That is Adam Lundy, and we've got a busy show because still coming up, we've got James Boyd from The Athletic to talk more about the Colts and Broncos coming up on Thursday night. Tough news in paradise. You know, Tom and Giselle had that fight and apparently are living separately, even though she seemed to show full support for him playing football this year. That may have been more PR move than anything else. But the New York Post reporting today that they have both hired divorce attorneys.
Oh.
Now, no paperwork has been filed, but they apparently have both retained a divorce attorney, according to the New York Post page 6 story. It's to determine if there is a separation, what would have to be done and taken care of, because they're right in the middle of building this, what, $25 million home on the billionaire's retreat in Miami. There's an island there just off the coast of Miami, near Miami Beach. There's an island that is pretty much billionaire's paradise, right? It's only got 30 homes or something like that, and they're all multi-million dollar mansions. And they're building there. But, so could be trouble in paradise for Tom and Giselle. Oh, and I saw this too. Dan Patrick this morning, I kept hearing him teasing a story about fishing. Yeah, and it's like, wait a minute, we don't talk fishing on Sports Talk Radio, right? But this is the one moment that we actually have to talk about fishing, because it is a major scandal in the world of fishing.
Really?
Yes.
A fishing scandal.
Professional fishing scandal.
Well, I got to hear about this.
Listen to this. Two fishermen thought they'd won the Lake Erie Walleye Trail's final event of the season.
Of course, I tune in every year.
Yes, and tournament director Jason Fisher, after weighing in the final catch, sliced open the duo's catch at weigh-in and found lead weights inside the fish.
Wow.
They had apparently been stuffed inside the fish caught by Chase Kaminsky of Pennsylvania and Jake Runyon of Ohio.
Chase and Jake?
Shame
on you.
A lot of problems here. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those where they might get whooped around a little bit behind the marina by some of these other fishermen.
They don't take too kindly to that.
Not at all. Anyway, Fisher, after finding the weights, screamed out, "We have weights in the fish," and then actually gave him the old ejection, like, get out of here.
Wow.
Like baseball ejection.
Yeah, like, you're out of here.
Threw the big fist in the air, told him to get out of here. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite the drama.
Woo.
Can you imagine they inserted weights? But apparently these tournaments are worth thousands of dollars in cash.
Good prize money. Yeah.
And they have been caught cheating. So that is drama in the world of professional walleye fishing. Right, and not too far away either.
Not far at all. That's right in our backyard.
46862, Parkview Sports Madison text line. Colts football against Denver Thursday night. We'll have the game right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. We'll also talk about it with James Boyd when we come back here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Ball State coach Mike New joins us in hour number two around 5:20 this afternoon. Also a chance for you to win with Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. You know, the cheaters in the Lake Erie Walleye Fishing Tournament, the ones who had their fish cut open and found lead weights, they are multiple time winners on this tour. So now all of a sudden there's speculation. Maybe they've been doing this before. Let's talk Colts football. Denver Broncos up next. Short week Thursday night out in the Mile High City. Joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline to talk about it from The Athletic, it is James Boyd. And I don't even know where to begin on this, because you could look back, but I think we should probably start looking forward since it's such a short week, James. And let's talk about the health of the Colts. We already know that Shaquille Leonard is going to be out of this one. What do we know about Jonathan Taylor?
JT is probably going to be a game-time decision. That's kind of the vibe that I got today talking to him. He wouldn't rule himself out, but he also wouldn't rule himself in. He said he wants to play, he expects to play, but obviously that decision will come down to the wire. And he was just saying he wants to get as much treatment as possible. He kept preaching treatment, treatment, treatment. So kind of got to take him at his word and see if he'll be able to go. I don't think he's – I know this, actually. He has not missed a game in his career due to an injury. He didn't miss one because of a – COVID-19 issue, I believe last season. But yeah, man, it's sort of spiraling for the Colts, and they really need him in there. And if he's gonna be in there, you'd like him to be, you know, close to 100%.
If he's not in there, how did the Colts line up? Is Nyheim Hines going to get the bulk of the work, and who would back up Hines?
I would expect Hines to be getting more of the bulk in that scenario. They need to feature him more in general, and then Frank Reich did say that Philip Lindsay could be in line to get called up and get some reps, you know, former Pro Bowler, a guy who's obviously familiar with Denver, having played there. Mm-hmm. So that would be the backup plan.
It would certainly make sense. I mentioned earlier that one of the intriguing parts of this matchup is you've got two teams that I think in similar positions, with Denver trying to upgrade what they thought was a somewhat talented roster that just missed that quarterback position. And then you look at Indianapolis. Thought they had a pretty talented roster, just needed an upgrade at the quarterback position. And so far, seems like they're incompletes for both quarterbacks at this point. Do I have something kind of figured out here between these two?
You do. And just statistically speaking, let's look at this. The Colts rank last in the NFL in offense, 14.3 points per game. The Denver Broncos rank third, you know, to last, 16.5 points per game. So to say, going into the season, that each team would have Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson, you'd be averaging less than 20 points per game through four games, I think a lot of people would say you're crazy. So it has been some issues on both sides. But the thing about the Broncos is that they're 2-2 and looking to have a winning record after this week five game, where the Colts are looking to just find anything to kind of keep this thing from slipping away.
There were reports earlier today, Chris Ballard is perhaps on the hot seat, that Jim Irsay may be starting to have doubts about Chris Ballard. I'm sure that includes Frank Reich. You know, it's just kind of frustrating that you go through the same sequence year after year. Tough starts, losses at Jacksonville. Here they are again. How big is this game for the Colts? How big is it for Reich and Ballard? I don't see a move being made during the season, but the Colts have to start turning this thing around.
Yeah, I think this is a big game. However, I think the two games after, you got two more division games right after with Tennessee and Jacksonville. And I think those two weigh a little bit more than this one. Obviously, you want to get a win. You want to get back on track. But to me, if you end up win or losing this game, but if you go through the next 2 weeks after that and drop both division games and you're 0-5, or not 0-5, but rather winless through five games against division opponents, I think that both their seats are going to get warm. And like you said, I don't expect any decisions to be made throughout the season, but it'll be hard to not drown out the noise or not, you know, expect that moves could possibly be made if this season just completely bottoms out. So I think they have to bounce back against Denver, but especially against those division opponents, because to me, if you look at the schedule, we were kept saying before the season, five of your first seven are against division opponents. And if you don't have any wins to show for it through five division games and one of the worst divisions in the league, I mean, something has to change.
You know, James Boyd from The Athletic joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And one thing that I am getting so tired of is all of the announcers, especially on the national stage, talking about this elite Colts offensive line. And I'm like, okay, that's 3 years outdated, because this current line hasn't proven itself to be an elite offensive line. And you've even got changes in the personnel as they start Will Fries last Sunday. What was Frank Reich's comments about Fry's performance? Are they going to stick with him at right guard? What did he have to say about the offensive line?
I would expect them to stick with him. Reich was just saying what they've been saying. It's communication issues, and a lot of that comes down to execution. And I'm kind of thinking how you're thinking, where, hey, you're a quarter of the way through the season. If things do not change quickly, this is what you are. I don't care what the payroll says. I understand they have the highest paid offensive line in the league, but they haven't played like it. And quite frankly, they haven't even been average. They've been bad. So my thinking is, I don't think that they're going to be that offensive line of last year where they were, you know, making these holes for Jonathan Taylor and making things work. But I do think that they should be able to be an average offensive line in the NFL and not have Jonathan Taylor getting completely, you know, hammered before he, you know, can get any momentum going, and have Matt Ryan running for his life. And not to let Matt Ryan off the hook either. He's been fumbling like crazy, even when he has a chance to hold onto the ball, and he's not getting blindsided. So it seems like a lot of the offensive issues do start up front, but everyone has to collectively do better, because this is, I mean, watching some of that stuff is like watching, you know, high school football at a really small program or something.
Yeah, it can be kind of bad. And 20 points, the Colts haven't eclipsed 20 points in any game so far this year. So when we talk about the offense, I think they did show something in the last couple of games that I think this has to be a trend to continue, and that is utilization of the tight ends, especially in the red zone. They've got two guys that are very tough to handle in one-on-one situations, and I think it's something the Colts have to continue to exploit with Jelani Woods and Mo Alie-Cox.
Absolutely, and I'll throw Kylan Granson in there. He had his best pass-catching game as a pro. I know he has to improve as a blocker, but I did ask Matt Ryan today about that. I was like, hey, man, what do you think of the connection you're building with your tight end room? This is a guy who played with Tony Gonzalez, obviously, and tight ends are important to his success in the league, and he was just saying he feels like they're getting more comfortable, and then they're also winning their matchups a little bit better. So maybe that can exploit that again, you know, Thursday night and pull out a win at Mile High, but the bottom line is you brought these guys in to have an impact, and it seems like if there is some silver lining from the offense, that was one of them, you know, getting out of that loss against the Titans.
Okay, I've got a philosophy. I want to see if you'll back me up and if you think Frank Reich will be on this track as well, that the Colts need to come out with almost a hurry-up, two-minute-style offense. Get to the line of scrimmage, run your plays, play with tempo, play quick. Because it seems like when they get into that mode, they've had some of their most successful drives. This huddle and line up in the first half and in the early parts of the game, it's not working for me. What do you expect the Colts to do to try to change things up? Because you've got to do something different. The Colts are starting miserably. What can you do to change the first quarter of games?
Yeah, that's the magic question. You ask any coach or player, and they're all going to say, oh, we have to focus more. We have to come together more. And it's like, yeah, that's all, you know, cliches. I do think they could play a little bit faster, and it probably will help with some of the issues up front. You can't expect Matt Ryan to drop back and do 5- and 7-step drops the entire game, because he just doesn't have enough time. Maybe if they get it out quicker, they can, you know, find a rhythm better, but they're also struggling to even establish some semblance of a run game. I mean, when you can't run the ball, they had 38 yards total, you know, net yards last week on the ground, which was their lowest total, I believe, since like 2015 in a game. When that happens, it's really, really hard to find any offensive rhythm. So they have to at least do something up front to make the defense be honest. I mean, when they're able to just stop you with their front four and not even have to blitz, and they're steady winning in the trenches, it's hard to get anything going. But I do think up-tempo could possibly help, just because you're not expected to hold onto the ball too long, and maybe you can win some of those one-on-one matchups that you exploited with your tight ends. And even like Alec Pierce, he had a pretty good game, and Paris Campbell had a few catches. So maybe they can build off of that, but, I mean, you got to get over 50 yards rushing.
Yeah, and you almost know coming out in that first series or two that the defense are going to be keyed on Jonathan Taylor, especially if Taylor's out there. So I think maybe it's an opportunity to kind of come out and go on the offensive, so to speak, and maybe try to make some plays early to get a lead. What do you expect from this game? I mean, I'm thinking it's probably going to be, we've seen enough of these two teams, it's probably going to be some type of 2017 contest. What do you expect?
I expect it to be pretty ugly. I mean, both offenses have struggled. Both defenses have been okay. I will give the Colts defense credit. They've looked pretty good in, like, certain halves of games. I thought the Chiefs game, they were pretty good throughout the entire game. Second half of the Titans game, that they looked pretty good. Maybe they can anchor down and really give the offense just every chance that, you know, possible to win. But I don't expect some high-scoring shootout. I know they're playing at high altitude. I expect the Colts maybe be a little winded. But I would expect something low-scoring and coming down to that last quarter, last play, last drive, which has kind of been, you know, the Colts' game so far. Outside of the Jacksonville game, they've been in every game. It's just, can you do enough to gut it out? And in my opinion, they can. They just can't play from behind. Like, stop digging yourself these huge holes where you're – having to fight back from 14 down, 17 down, and then when you get there, you have to play perfect to win. You know, do yourself a favor and not be behind the eight ball so early.
Sounds good. James, always appreciate you jumping on. Look forward to the coverage of Colts football this week as they take on the Denver Broncos. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yep, that is James Boyd from The Athletic, covers the Indianapolis Colts, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. One thing, I thought about this last night. Number one, the Colts' originality in their running plays, especially after you watch the Rams and the 49ers and you look at how they set up the run. Here's the problem the Colts have. They believe they are better than they really are. We have heard all along about how they believe in this offensive line. They believe in Jonathan Taylor. The problem is they think they can just barrel straight ahead and run you over, create enough seam that Jonathan Taylor can make plays. You watch a team like the Rams or you watch a team like the 49ers and they realize they don't have a Pro Bowl running back. Okay, they might not have what they consider to be the best offensive line in the league. Rams have had to make a couple of replacements due to injury. James Whitworth. I can't remember his first name. He's out. He's retired. And so you look at those two teams, and they understand they've got to give their offensive linemen some type of an edge. So they set up trap blocking, and they do a double team. They pull a guard. They lead through the hole. They bring a tight end to let him lead through the hole. They do a lot of creative things in their blocking schemes to try to make it easier for the offensive line in the running game. The Colts, I've not seen them do that. And they used to really love to do it with Quentin Nelson. They would pull him, whether it was left or right, they would pull him to get him out in front. And they don't do it as much. Now, I know they've changed offensive line coaches. They've changed offensive coordinators. Nick Sirianni, I think, was much more creative in how he designed the offense, but right now it's way too much vanilla if you're the Indianapolis Colts. If you've got a talented running back, do everything you can with the way you scheme to give that running back a chance to really shine. It's like an NBA team having a superstar, let's say a Giannis, and not running any plays to get him the ball. And, you know, it's like make it as easy as you can because – if you've got this elite offensive line that they believe they have, although we have some doubts, then a creative scheme is going to really make those guys shine and run some traps, run some misdirection, do something to give your guys a little added leverage to make the job easier for them rather than more difficult for them. Because they don't always win the one-on-one battle.
Yeah, stop resting on your laurels and stop believing that you're just automatically the best offensive line and all that and just actually try something else that could actually improve it.
Get creative.
Yeah.
Be a little more creative. And I think the Colts feel like they don't have to be cute or creative because they're skilled. And they've maybe overvalued how much skill they really have. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time to go back to doing some creative things and setting up maybe some different types of pass blocking scheme or run blocking schemes, and maybe some misdirection, counter plays, different things they can do to give Taylor a better chance to get going on the ground, because 42 yards on 20 carries isn't going to cut it for the Indianapolis Colts. We'll take a break when we come back, top of the hour, and that means it's time for Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. If you're ready to play, we're just about ready to have you call in, so get ready. Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia comes up in about 10 minutes. Also on the way, Ball State football coach Mike New. It's all part of hour number two of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.